Hello, everyone. Dan Delman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Well, today's program is going to be Baseball 2018. And in order to introduce this topic, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about your host's past. Back in 1948 and 49 and 1950, I was bat boy for the Detroit Tigers in the visiting clubhouse. 1948 to 1950. Those were years I'll never forget. I got out of school at about 12:30 one day, opening day, and then I took the streetcar down to the ballpark, which at that time was called Briggs Stadium. I ate my lunch, which tasted like cardboard, and I thought I might wet my pants on the streetcar ride because I was so nervous. Well, I got to the ballpark, Briggs Stadium, and I went in and I looked for the visitors' clubhouse. I found it, and there was a sign next to the door which said, "Visitors' Clubhouse. No visitors allowed." Some of baseball's irrefutable logic, huh? Well, once inside, I had experiences that are seldom forgot. For example, during this period of time, the Cleveland Indians broke the New York Yankees series of trips to the World Series because Cleveland won the American League pennant and then won the World Series in 1948. In 1949 was the beginning of a five-year streak where the Yankees won the American League pennant and also won the World Series. So as a clubhouse boy, as a ball boy, as a bat boy for visiting teams in Detroit, I was able to see the arrival of Casey Stengel, who managed the Yankees for the first time in 1949. I left after the 1950 season, but the Yankees were still winning World Series. I was there also at a time when black players were coming into the American League, and I got to meet Larry Doby, Satchel Paige, Luke Easter, and Chicago fans will be interested to know that at that time, Minnie Minoso was a rookie. So all of these things taken together, I think about when the baseball season begins every year. First, I worked as a clubhouse boy, which meant cleaning up and mopping the floors. It meant cleaning the toilets, cleaning the showers, putting all the wet uniforms into the dryer, doing all of the menial tasks that people never think of when they see a bat boy on the field. I happened to be the first ball boy in Major League Baseball. The Tigers asked me to sit on a stool out along the right field line to keep inebriated spectators from jumping over the wall after foul balls. I did that for a while, and then I was asked to be bat boy. And over the period of 3 years, I alternated back and forth between being a ball boy and being a bat boy. If you wanted to know a little bit more about that, I'll tell you, you can buy a book called Hey Kid by Danny Dillman, and that'll tell you quite a bit about what went on in the clubhouse, and on the field. A number of things which I really can't say on the radio. Well, 2018, here we are. And we're going to start out with some predictions for the American League. And we're going to start with the American League West Division. Here, the runs leader, during his first six full seasons in the major leagues, 2012 to 2017, Mike Trout has scored more runs than any other big leaguer and has averaged 112 per year. And my Detroit Tiger, former Detroit Tiger, Ian Kinsler, is second to Mike Trout. Well, how do I see the American League West this year? I see Houston winning it, followed by Los Angeles, Seattle, Texas, and Oakland. And moving to the American League Central Division, here I want to tell you a little bit about Corey Kluber. Cleveland's league leader became the eighth American League pitcher since 1920, when the live ball era began, to lead the league in wins, in ERA, in complete games, and in shutouts. Well, who were some of the others who did this that you might recognize? One of them was Bob Feller for the Cleveland Indians in 1940. One was Hal Newhouser with the Tigers in 1945. And then Roger Clemens with the Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, in 1997. How do I see the Central Division this year? I think it's going to be another Cleveland year, followed this year by Minnesota, Chicago. The Chicago White Sox are going to jump to third place, followed by Kansas City, and alas, my Detroit Tigers will bring up last position. They'll finish at the bottom of the Central Division. It's a rebuilding year. In the American League East, we have some information for you. Aaron Judge with the New York Yankees became the sixth rookie in Major League Baseball history to hit 30 or more homers, score 100 runs, and total more than 100 RBIs. Following him was Al Rosen back in 1950, my last year at the ballpark. And Al Rosen became one of my good friends, or I should say a buddy to the Bat Boys who were working in the clubhouse at that time, and also a close friend of Larry Doby, one of the first black players with the Cleveland Indians. How do we see the American League East this year? I don't think there's any doubt. It's going to be New York at the top, Boston bringing up second place, Toronto, then Tampa Bay, and Baltimore. Those are my predictions for the West, the Central, and the East. We'll wait and see how many errors I've made. Now let's look over at the National League. And we'll begin again with the West. A comment or two about the West. Over the last three seasons, Nolan Arenado of the Colorado Rockies leads all major league hitters with 393 RBIs. Only seven other players have 300 or more RBIs since 2015. And one of these players, he's in fourth place, is Tony Rizzo with the Chicago Cubs. How do I see the West this year? Looks to me like the Dodgers, it'd be Los Angeles finishing first, the Colorado Rockies second, Arizona Diamondbacks third, San Francisco Giants, and then bringing up last position is the San Diego Padres. Now let's look at the Central Division in the National League. Little information about the Central Division before I give you my picks for the season. Cubs slugger Chris Bryant has scored 319 runs in his first three major league seasons, and he ranks first among all National League Central players in runs scored since 2015. Third behind Chris Bryant is again Rizzo with the Cubs. Now let's see what the prediction is for the Central Division. The Chicago Cubs, number one. The St. Louis Cardinals, number two. Milwaukee in third place. Pittsburgh. And then in last place, the Cincinnati Reds. And finally, the National League East. A few comments before I give you the predictions. Bryce Harper of the Nationals is one of eight players in Major League Baseball history to club 150 or more homers and score at least 500 runs before the age of 25. He is at the bottom of a list of about eight players. But looking at the final finish in this Eastern Division, I have Washington, number one, Atlanta, New York, Philadelphia, and bringing up last place, we have the Miami Marlins. Time now for Chief Wahoo, the mascot debate. The announcement in January that the Cleveland Indians will remove Chief Wahoo logo from use on the field has invited a reexamination of sports teams' use of Native American-inspired names and imagery. What was behind the decision to remove Chief Wahoo? The Cleveland Indians will not use Chief Wahoo logo, a grinning, red-faced, and feathered caricature of a Native American, which has been used since the 1940s, on the field beginning with the 2019 season. Beginning with 2019, no more Chief Wahoo. The Major League Baseball team, however, will still sell merchandise with the logo in the Cleveland area. It would lose its trademark if it discontinued all use of the image. The team has been phasing out Chief Wahoo since 2009, replacing the logo on most jerseys and caps with a C, and in 2014, removing all Chief Wahoo signs inside the ballpark. Native American groups have long been vocally opposed to the caricature, saying it is racist, and they have staged protests before home opening games. In the announcement about Chief Wahoo, the team and the league said the removal does not mean the franchise's name will change. But how many sports teams have names referring to Native Americans? On the professional level, five teams have names that refer to Native Americans in the National Football League: Kansas City Chiefs, Washington Redskins in baseball, the Atlanta Braves and Cleveland Indians, and in the National Hockey League, it's the Chicago Blackhawks. In 2005, the National Collegiate Athletic Association banned Native American mascots, but eight colleges, after getting support from local tribes, appealed the decision and retained their names and logos. A recent search of mascotdb.com, a database of mascots in the United States, indicated that over 2,200 high schools in the country still have Native American names or mascots. So if you wanted to look at that site, the exact name of it is mascot with a capital letter M and then capital D, capital B, .com. Why did teams start using these names and logos? Sports logos are just one kind of reference. In a grouping that includes the packaging for Land O'Lakes butter, the Apache helicopter, which connect to Native Americans, the American Indian is in a recent exhibit at the Smithsonian Museum and explores Native American imagery. The use of Native names and imagery in sports has its roots in the 1876 Battle of the Little Bighorn, when the Lakota Sioux and the Northern Cheyenne defeated the U.S. Army. After that battle, Native Americans became associated with being fiercely intelligent and confident as a fighting force. What are the arguments for continuing to use these names and mascots? Some teams say their names honor Native Americans generally, or sometimes even specific individuals affiliated with teams. The attachment to various symbols also has to do with the fact that sports fandom, in general, provides people with a sense of belonging, distinctiveness, and meaning. For people whose fandom is a key part of their identity, mascots are so connected to the team that the team and mascot become one and the same, which means a mascot change can be very upsetting, even in the cases where fans perceive the mascot to be racist. What are the arguments against? Research shows that Native American mascots negatively affect Native youth's self-esteem, feelings about their community's worth, and a sense of future achievement possibilities for them. This led the American Psychological Association to call for an end to the practice in 2004. What else is happening along these lines? In 2014, the U.S. Patent and Trade Office canceled 6 trademarks for the Washington Redskins, saying the name cannot be trademarked because federal law doesn't protect trademarks with offensive and disparaging language. However, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in another case in June that the federal government's ban on offensive trademark registrations violated the First Amendment, effectively ending the legal controversy over the team's name. I thought before leaving you today that I would suggest several books which people writing into the Christian Science Monitor have said they enjoyed very much, and they enjoyed them so much that they have written about them. I'll just give you their names. One is Paris in the Present Tense. Janice Weber of Burlington, Illinois, wrote the Monitor March 12th about that. And then Grant by Ron Chernow was written about by Joseph Arnold of Gig Harbor, Washington. And Icefall by John Aull and John Balzar was written about by Frank Cole, Crystal Lake, Illinois. I would give you more information about these, but we seem to be running out of time since we opened up the baseball season. In our next program, you'll find out that technology is making it easier than ever to produce fake videos. How will democracy cope? The question to be asked is truth losing face value? And now we have Ode to Joy. So long, everyone.